Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of our Market Call with Stephen and Ken. My name is Ashley, and I will be your silent host today while we let our two professionals review current market conditions, how they're feeling about it, and where we may see ourselves in the coming months. Now, before we begin, I just wanted to remind our listeners to please send in any questions or comments to us. We're happy to address them in the next episode, and you can send those questions and remarks to my email, and that's at ashley.nichols@nbpcd.com. So now I'm just going to fade my way into the background for a bit, and let's get Stephen and Ken in here and take the reins. So go ahead, guys.
Well, welcome, everyone. As many know, I'm Steve, and we've got Ken with us today as well.
Hi, everybody. So thanks for listening.
Maybe we'll kind of keep the same format as last time. What we'll first go is just sort of say what's happened in the market and, you know, what's changed since last month. I'll let Ken start on that one.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. So not a lot has changed since last month. We were looking for a little bit of a rally to the upside and did not get it, but the market has not necessarily fallen a whole lot from that time either. So we are starting to go a little bit sideways, kind of left to right instead of up to down, which is normal. It is the summer, so it is kind of turning into a bit of a dull market as a lot of large portfolio managers around the globe work less over these next couple of months. So I would kind of expect, unless there's some big shock out there, that markets would kind of continue on this path, at least for July and part of August.
Yeah,
that's about it.
That's a good point. As they were saying, all the big boys went to the Hamptons, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Vacation time. Happens every year. This year might be a few more sticking around because earnings season starts in the middle of July. The Fed is still actively hiking rates. But overall, liquidity in the market is at historically low levels. And, you know, trading is quite muted still. So you can get big moves up and down, but that's mainly because of a lack of liquidity. Just it's dull. So there are two sayings: never short a dull market in a bull trend, and don't buy a dull market in a bear trend. And we're kind of in that dull market bear trend thing. So
exactly,
that's where we stand. Yeah.
And like I said, part of, if there's anything that has kind of happened, I would say in the last month or so, is, you know, is what we expected, right? We've seen the markets come off over that period of time we talked about, and the first part of the markets coming off is a contraction in the price-to-earnings multiples, right? So as interest rates start to rise, you always get these contractions where people are unwilling to pay as much for future earnings, so the PEs come down. So we've seen that. It's probably almost been a 35% contraction in the PE. Now, as Ken just mentioned a minute ago, earnings are the next. And right now, there has not really been earnings downgrades or decreases
zero
in earnings estimates, which...
Zero.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's zero, which seems a little weird given what we're seeing out there. Very, very much prices of everything seems to be coming up, and it's going to be interesting because all the PMIs, which is what's classified as the purchasing managers' indexes, are all indicating lowers, which usually means lower earnings. So we could, after earnings season, as Ken said, get the second leg down, which is the contraction in the E, which is going to be interesting. And just a quick aside, I read a little piece yesterday, and people go, well, aren't analysts good at predicting things? No, they are terrible. In the last three recessions, analysts forecast missed by 33%, 46%, and 25%. And we've got, you know, the global PMIs, purchasing manager index, suggesting we will see EPS drop quite a bit. So
that's right. We have, technically, we are possibly in a recession already. Q1 was negative GDP. The Atlanta Fed put out a report last week saying Q2 looks like we are negative 2% GDP. So historically, when you look back, recessions are only called after the fact, but a recession typically is two quarters of GDP, slowing economic growth, everything that we're seeing now is lining up to be in a recession as we speak. So I would expect earnings guidance to start to come down through this earnings season, and we've already started to see companies announcing layoffs in Q2. We started to see the first ones, so I would expect that to continue as well. And a lot still depends on inflation and the Fed and interest rates. And right now, what it's looking like is we have the Fed, who focuses on two main things, like we talked about last time, is employment and price, which is inflation. Employment is still low. We'll have a jobs number this Friday. Give us an unemployment rate. I still don't think we've seen enough job cuts for that unemployment rate to start to really tick up. So as long as unemployment kind of stays in this level it is now, and maybe a little bit higher, the Fed has said they will continue to hike interest rates. And if they're hiking rates into a slowing economy, we have seen it happen one time previously in history, and it led to a kind of a decade of sideways markets, which is what we expect to be the outcome from this anyways. So none of that is a surprise for us.
Also, just add to that, Ken, as well, is that, you know, a lot of people are feeling quite negative on the markets, but they are not reacting in their portfolios in such a way. And a lot of that is, you know, people are very concerned that if they do get out, you know, because we've seen since 2010, the Federal Reserve has come to the rescue of people, right? So in 2010, the market was down. What did they do? They cut rates basically to zero and started all this quantitative easing. And it happened in 2011, 12, 16, 18, and 20. They come to the rescue.
But every time the market has fallen, every time the market has fallen more than 15%, they've initiated a new program or restarted what they had previously stopped. It's funny because while we were, Ashley and I were waiting for you to log into this, we were talking exactly that. And I was mentioning to her that it is created, what you just mentioned, is created a moral hazard within the market. So since 2008, well, maybe 2011, the mantra has been buy risky assets, and the riskier the better, and even use leverage if you can, because anytime the market falls, the government is going to come in and bail you out. Now, I've been taught, you know, from my father, who was 40 years in this business, he learned from his father that a prudent investment strategy should not rely on your portfolio being bailed out by the government. And that's been the model for the last 10 years. And it's incredibly unfortunate because I feel that a lot of people are too complacent today in the face of a regime change that, unlike we've seen for 40 years. And when we're coming from a high level like we are, the everything bubble, we call it, the fall can be quite dramatic. And people also think that because of history, especially in North America, that the markets rebound, and they rebound fairly quickly. You know, 2020 was kind of a one-month recession. The market fell 35%. 2 months later, it was already back at the highs. And that is actually incredibly rare. It only happens 10% of the time. If we look at a market like Japan, from 1987 to 1989, Japan was in had a massive real estate bubble. And when that market finally popped, just last year in 2021, it took 35 years for them to get back to the highs from 1989. So imagine if you're retired and you're drawing money to live on from your account, and it takes 35 years to get back to the high. Now, you know, if we look at my dad, he's not going to be alive in 40 years, but if his portfolio today falls 50% and he continues to take money out for the rest of his time, my inheritance would be incredibly low. And that's just my example from my family. A lot lower than it is today. And that to me is a real shame, and it, you know, kind of breaks my heart that that's going to happen to a lot of people if this plays out the way that it potentially could.
And along with that too, Ken, there's the other mantra is that never sell, right? Like
it's
amazing how hard it is to get people to sell, because in the past, selling has not been the best because the market rebounded. Like you said, the Fed has bailed people out. But just like you said, going back to all those times where the Fed came in, you need to step back and say, what are they doing now? The market's down over 20%, and the Fed is hiking rates, not cutting them, and they're initiating quantitative tightening. Like, they put trillions of dollars in the market, which they don't want to be there anymore, right? And then, you know, the inflation side, and we talked about it in the last call, talking about how inflation really hurts the lower to middle class higher than the upper. So what is Canada doing? What's the state of California doing? They're basically saying, oh, we have inflation, so we're going to give you money to help offset the inflation. Well, the problem with that is inflation is because demand is bigger than supply. So originally, prices go up, demand goes down, but they're basically giving money to keep this going for longer. So it's not going to work out well.
No, and the hope is that, and we probably will see, I mean, we've seen oil, gasoline prices, they are falling because the market is starting to price in a recession. So we probably have seen inflation peak at least for six months maybe, or at least be close to peaking. Calling an inflation peak is like calling a market bottom. It's very difficult to do. But I could see inflation numbers come down a little bit. And then if we were to repeat the 1970s, the Fed in the 1970s hiked rates, inflation came down a little bit, the economy went into a recession, so they cut rates again, and then inflation took off on them, and they were late, and then they had to hike rates significantly higher than where they had cut them from before. So there's a potential for that, a similar thing like that to happen, which just extends this situation that we're in now. But again, I don't know if that's exactly what's going to happen, but it's all just part of the probability and things to look out for.
So that's kind of the bigger picture, the bad news side of things, and like you said, it can get worse. So everyone who's listening, keep in mind that's really bad if you're fully invested in the markets.
That's right. Selling is not a four-letter word.
Remember. Exactly. And the old adage of buy low, sell high only works if you have something to buy with, which our situation, we have a lot of cash.
We do right now. So the ultimate goal of this is, number one rule is don't lose money. Don't lose a lot of money. It's impossible to not lose some. That's just not the way trading and investing works. But the goal is to not have large drawdowns. As everybody listening to this hopefully remembers, the first time they met me or meeting with Stephen, our goal is if the market falls 20 to be down 5 to 7. If it falls more than 20, is to still be down 5 to 7. So we've hit that first target, and now we've got a lot of cash. So ultimately, what I hope, what I go to bed at night hoping for us only, is to have enough cash available by the time this is over to buy a generational bottom and then sit and watch it go up for the next 20 years without having to do a whole lot. Goal number one. Not as easy as it sounds. Bear markets are tough on both people who are bearish and bullish. A true bear market probably nothing is classified as a true bear market until both bears and bulls lose money, because they can be so difficult. You get huge rallies on the way down. But the ultimate goal is to have that opportunity, buy the generational low, and make enough money so that everybody is absolutely fine, can pass on wealth to second, third generations, buy businesses, go on vacations, accomplish whatever you want to accomplish. That's the main goal. if that doesn't play out the way that we think it does in the market, let's say this is the bottom of the market and we start to reverse up and we have the amount of cash that we have, we will miss out on the initial first to move up. But we will get, our system will get us back in, just like it got us out, it will get us back in. In the meantime, let's say that our goal number one still is the most likely path. This is probably going to take at least another year, could be 3 years in total by the time we hit the bottom. And in between that time, our cash levels could theoretically go from where they are today, you know, 70 plus percent, down to 5-10%, based on rallies. Trying to take advantage of bear market rallies, not just missing out, because every rally can be the start of a new bull trend. So you have to be nimble. You have to be willing to take a quick loss when disappointed in something. So if we get a buy signal and we buy whatever XSP we'll say, and within a week or two we get a sell signal, we have to take that signal just because of the market that we're in. So you could see confusing trades that don't look like they make a lot of sense, buying something higher and selling it lower, buying it back, you know, 2 weeks later. So I would expect to see some of that over the next 6 months to a year. But like the main point I'm trying to get across is our absolute goal is to avoid the majority of the drawdown and have an opportunity to buy a generational low. In the meantime, things will be more difficult than just that simple statement.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, when you're talking about bear market rallies, just to put into some context, if you go back to the 2000 and 2002, you know, there was a 7.5, 8.5, 19, 21, 21, 21. Those are pretty good rallies.
There was a 15% rally in one day in the NASDAQ in April of 2000.
Yeah, and then even in 2009, which wasn't very good, it was, you know, 7, 12, 8, 18, 24. And just keep in mind that you get the biggest rallies after you've had the biggest drops, right? Because people always talk about, you know, if you ever miss out the 10 best rallies in the market, your account's worth X dollars, right? Well, it's true. But what they don't say is if you miss the worst 10 or the biggest drops, it's worth so much more because you don't have 20% rallies in the market when the market's up 30%. Usually, you have it after it's dropped 30, right?
That's right. So you need that 60% to get back to even, where we need, you know, an 8% rally to get back to even.
Yeah, and like you said, it's those rallies that we are anticipating and hopefully we'll take advantage of, but, you know, if we're wrong...
As best we can.
Yeah, quick little
but still, but still being cautious, right? This is still a market to be cautious. And 1929 is the one that keeps me up the most at night is, you know, they had a 50% rally over 4 months from October 1929 to the beginning of 1930. And then they rallied 40% from that low for about 18 months. And that 40% rally made everybody who got out originally get back in and believe that the whole thing was over and done with. And then from that 40% rally from the bottom, it fell 80% over the next year. So it's moves like that that trap a lot of people. And that's what I'm talking about. It's probably not a true bear market until both bulls and bears lose money.
Yeah, hopefully we won't have that happen. But you know.
Not exactly. But you just like we have said numerous times, history doesn't repeat exactly, but it rhymes. So you know, I've been expecting a bit of a rally, but I keep getting sell signals. But I would expect it to come at some point. And we're still at that phase in the market cycle where we're. Most people are in denial that something bad is going to happen. And usually when that's the case, you get a pretty good rally that convinces everybody that they were right to be in denial. And then the market sells off, and that's when you get the panic, and then the capitulation, and then you get the generational buying opportunity. So we're still in the denial phase from everything from what history tells me. But yeah, that... when we when we get that generational opportunity, we will be ready. We'll have sell signals in place beforehand, and we'll have lots of cash to buy. It's that 20, 30, 40% rally up that I'm not 100% confident we will catch the majority of it. But I also know that when that ends, should it end, then we will be out fairly quickly. And we own stuff right now that is really liquid, so it's easy to sell. So we can get out of things quite quickly and into them quite quickly, too. So.
Yeah, and also, too, it's like if you take a look at it in general, just you know, reading some other research, but pretty much every single market bottom happens when either A, the economy starts turning and getting better, or the Fed policy changes, right? So either you have to have your PMIs, the Purchasing Managers Index, or your leading indicators turning up, or that none of that's even there, right?
No, it's still in the falling phase. So yeah. if this time, because of inflation, the probability of the Fed bailing us out this time is the lowest it's been since the 70s again. So makes it hard to see that would be the case. So if the Fed can't bail us out, that means the economy is going to have to go through the cycle, and that's what takes that takes a lot longer. That takes 2 to 3 years as we cycle through a recession, earnings recession, economic recession, employment recession, coming from super elevated levels. The downside is bigger than most people expect, and will take longer than most people expect in that scenario, unless the Fed comes out and does another shock and awe thing like they did in 2020. This time, because it's happened to me before, we'll be a little bit quicker to jump on board. I don't anticipate it like I didn't anticipate it then, but this time I don't think they can even come up with a new set of rules like they did in 2020 to bail everybody out, because in part of their mandate inflation would go a lot higher, and politically they can't take that.
And like you said, we're kind of thinking from a bigger picture. We could be in a trading range that lasts for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years or longer. So what that really means?
Wherever we bottom from, yeah.
Sorry.
Wherever we bottom from will be the low, but we probably won't hit the high from this year for 10, 15. Could be longer years.
Or even if we do hit the high, we're not going to go significantly higher, right?
Just go. No, you're right. 2008 did go, you know, slightly higher than the high in 2001, and then it fell 80% from that high.
Yeah. So even the other side of it is, even if, you know, our kind of maybe doom and gloom scenario doesn't come out, even if you look at it the other way, is the market's not going to be a whole heck of a lot higher than it was at the beginning of this year. So how is your portfolio really going to grow at all unless you are making your tactical decisions? And 90% of advisors, maybe even more out there, don't do any tactical asset allocation at all. They just basically hope that the market comes back, right? And that's a really scary scenario, because you talk to a lot of people and there's no downside protection.
No, okay? Bonds aren't working as a hedge. They've had the worst start to the year ever. This is a stock and bond positively correlated sell-off, which is just incredibly rare. So there is no safe haven. Really, the only asset that's gone up this year is the U.S. dollar.
Yeah. Consistently. Well, I was just looking at, you know, this little six-month table. I was looking at, you know, the only thing that's gone up is basically interest rates. You know, Fed funds are up 1.5% from basically 0.25, you know. The 2-year treasury notes are up 2.25%, and they're at 3% right now, so you can think how much that's moved. The overnight rates have gone up. You know, Canadian dollar is kind of flattish. The U.S. dollar has been strong. And then you look at the things that cost a lot of money, like crude, natural gas, copper, they're all up, right? And, you know, these people who jumped into cryptocurrencies because they were, quote-unquote, a hedge, you know, that's been an absolute disaster. And we really just found out that crypto is just one of these bubbles that's been created by the Fed.
Yeah, it looks like a liquidity bubble. Bitcoin has kind of failed its the reasons for investing. It was supposed to be digital gold. Gold's held in better, significantly better. It was supposed to be a store of value. Multiple 80% corrections tell me it's not a store of value. And it was supposed to be an inflation hedge. And then in the face of the highest inflation we've seen in 40 years, it's fallen 70%. It's also another, to get doom and gloomy again, another thing that we're seeing, typically in bear markets, contagion, and contagion is bad news spreading from different asset classes. We saw it in 2008. The mortgages caused contagion through the banking system, which then caused contagion through the global economy. Since we spoke last time, something has changed with Bitcoin and the S&P 500. On smaller time frames, you know, like 5-minute, hour, 4-hour charts, Bitcoin's correlation has moved positive. So if something is positively correlated to another asset class, that simply means that it moves in the same direction together. They both move up, or they both move down, or they both go sideways. Bitcoin's correlation to the S&P 500 prior to about a month ago was negative. So there was really, if the Bitcoin was up, S&P was down or up. There was no pattern to it. And over the last month, when we do a correlation analysis and just from watching them both, the correlation has moved positive. We're talking from negative to like 0.5 to 0.7 on the positive side. So that tells me that we might be seeing some contagion from cryptocurrencies into normal equities. So just another thing to keep an eye on.
And like you said, from the contagion side, you know, we're seeing more and more stories in the, you know, used car market about the amount of loans that banks are holding to car loans is insane. And it kind of gets back to the 2008 situation where they basically
subprime
used to call them the ninja loans, right? No income, no job, no assets, right? But it seems like it's kind of moving back into that whole area. So you have the car loan side of things, you know, concerned about the housing markets. You know, anecdotally, we just, you know, talked to a client today who basically said the day that the rates rose, all of a sudden the entire market they were looking at buying a house completely changed. It went from, you know, we've got multiple bids to hello, is anyone there? And it's going to be interesting. But, you know, just to finish on a, let's call it a sunny note, is when you've got cash, that's when you want to look at opportunities, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we are in such an unbelievably positive scenario. Should anything bad happen quickly, we are positioned incredibly well for it. Because I watch every day, we should catch a portion of rallies that move up. You know, fingers crossed we get that generational buying opportunity, and then we're looking at, you know, fairly significant returns with the ability to take advantage of it.
And if we don't, then we're in a position where we're not losing significant capital. And also we're in a position where when clients are taking money out to live, it's not impacting their future returns. Right?
Nothing.
Taking out, you know, thousands of dollars out of your account after it's down 30%.
That's right. And that's when you do the math on that, that's what causes people to have to change their lifestyle later in life. And that is something that we try to avoid at all costs, because that's one of the worst things that a human can go through, is having to change lifestyles late in life.
Exactly. Hopefully it will not happen with our clients. You know,
it won't.
Won't happen with ours.
No, we're good.
We're good. So, you know, for everyone. No,
most of the pain you hear in my voice is for other people, and because of the way the industry is set up, a lot of people will suffer should this turn out as bad as we think it will. But for, like we said, for us, not our problem.
Yeah, we don't have trouble sleeping at night, and neither do most of our clients, because we've got lots of cash. You know, we look after things. They know what we're doing. And as we always say, if we're wrong, we're wrong because we made a conservative move and we didn't catch all the upside. It's not going to be because we just sat there and watched things blow up.
That's right. Well, we both know that missing some upside in a market bubble is absolutely fine, because when it goes, it wipes out. It can wipe out a whole decade of gains.
And it goes fast, too, right?
Usually, yep.
Like when you see these these things move. You know, we have people asking about oil stocks, right?
Yeah.
Someone say, "Oh, you buying oil 100%. Stocks now?" It's like, what do you mean now? Like, yeah. It's way too late to get in it a week or two ago. And some of those stocks dropped, well, they dropped last week, and 15-20% some of the names.
Some of the, from when we took our profits on it, on our oil stocks.
Yeah.
CNQ has fallen from when we took our profit. It's fallen 23%.
Yeah. And that was like 2 weeks ago?
Three weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and oil's down 10% today. It's down, CNQ's down 10.5% today.
Yeah, because all of remember, what is it? You go up, the markets go up on the stairs and down on the elevator.
That's right.
And so we don't like elevators. So anyway, I think that's, hopefully a quick little overview for everyone, and enjoy what we say, and I'll let Ashley close off, and that's goodbye from me, and let Ken close off himself too.
Thanks, Stephen. You better go take care of Maui.
Yeah, I know. It's the dog. We don't have a bear market. We have a dog market.
Yeah.
He's yelling sell. That's dog for sell.
Yeah.
Sell him too late. We already did that.
That's right. It's not really me that needs to sign anyone off. Maui's doing a very good job of doing it for us. So
that's right.
That's perfect.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Again, any questions, send them off to Ashley.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks again, guys, for this. This has been great. And our clients, I think, have really appreciated, especially that first episode. This just kind of builds on the confidence. And I think it's a great way for us just to outreach to our clients and to anyone who listens. Feel free to send it to anyone else. If you know someone who might be worried about the market conditions, might be worried about their own portfolios, definitely, send them the link when we send it to you. And we're always happy to help anyone else that might need it. So, yeah. So thanks so much, guys, and enjoy the rest of the day. And we will come back with another market call, hopefully in the coming weeks.
Thanks a lot. See you later.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.